This is Victoria Davis, a.k.a. The Victator.
And this is Sarah Klein Sundberg, a.k.a. Gail Manus.
And you're listening to Living and Loving in NYC.
Woo!
So today's going to be a weird one for a few reasons. We haven't actually recorded an episode in a while. The last one we did was the male bisexuality episode. For those that heard the episode after that, that was me and New Britt talking about our pussies. That had been recorded over the summer. We haven't recorded since Donald Trump was elected.
Is this true? I think we recorded the last episode a few days before the election, like 2 or 3 days before the election.
Yeah. So we've kind of taken a break, and I think we'll probably end up getting to that. Before we jump in, normal situation. Ghana's been doing great. You know, we've been still averaging about, like, 10 listeners a month in Ghana, which is all I can ask for. But there's someone's trying to steal Ghana's thunder, because the male bisexuality episode did really fucking well in Hong Kong, but to the point that I'm kind of skeptical of it. Like, we were averaging 200 downloads a day of that episode. That episode specifically in Hong Kong. And at first I was wondering, like, oh, okay, are we just going to get 200 downloads in general from Hong Kong? But no, it was only that episode, because then after we did the Our Pussies one and we released that, there was no, like, Hong Kong love for Our Pussies, but the Hong Kong situation was really big about our bi dudes.
I mean, I must confess, I don't know exactly how these things work, but I have a suspicion, and I actually have a suspicion about Ghana too, that there's some kind of proxy server thing that happens when people download podcasts, and that's why it looks like. So I think these might be real listeners, but I don't think they're necessarily actually in Hong Kong.
I know. This has been my fear for a long time, and it gets more and more confirmed as I ask people to email me from Ghana, and they never do. But it would be strange that all of a sudden the 200 thing from Hong Kong, I agree that it probably goes through some sort of filter. I don't know. But if you do happen to be a listener in Hong Kong who is obsessed with our male bisexuality episode, I want to believe that you exist.
We love you if you do.
Please email me at sluttyforalesbian@gmail.com. And again, that is the word four, not the number four, because that would be even sluttier.
Or if you're a podcast whiz who knows why this is happening.
Yeah, you could just tell us.
Feel free to tell us.
Tell us what's happening there. I have another suspicion, which is, now we're just revealing all our trade secrets here, which is, I think that was the one that we promoted on Facebook and did the sponsorship thing. And if there's some sort of, like, weird click when you download iTunes, when you go to the, like, you click an iTunes link from Facebook, it goes through some sort of Hong Kong thing. I don't know, bi dudes, Hong Kong bi dudes. I want to believe that you're down with us. So please email me, tell me.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're talking a lot about life post election, in, I guess, now post inauguration, since we are now at time of recording 2 weeks out exactly.
Yeah.
From it, I believe.
Basically.
And we have a guest with us here in the studio. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Otterpup.
Hello, Otterpup.
Hi, friends.
Why don't you tell us some intimate details of your life? Like, how do you identify sexually?
Well,
what's your relationship situation? How many moles do you have on your ass?
I actually have one big mole on my ass. I want to start with that because it's not that big, but it's prominent. And I think that I wanted to start with that as my chief identification point.
Do you identify with your mole?
Yes, exactly. Secondarily, I am gay. I live in Brooklyn. I'm a graphic designer.
Yes, actually. I don't know who that is, but otter fucker mother otter whatever
otter pup
otter pup
get
did,
it right
otter pup did our logo and
yes
and,
I had
and,
that
and
distinction
I, and I announced to the world that he was great in bed.
Yes,
yeah,
she would know.
Yeah,
and yes, I enjoyed doing that. And I remember there were many options. I remember there was one where there was a nipple with a radio signal emitting from it, but we didn't go for that. And I'm glad.
No, but I might get that tattooed.
yeah. That's still available for tattoo designs.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah, and we don't know that he's going to be speaking, but his lover is
my
here.
Lover is here to support me silently
and to slap you if you say something.
Yeah, exactly. He's to watch over me.
You're not supposed to say. Yeah, he's quite cute.
I love her.
Yeah. So I guess jumping in, as I referenced in the intro. Yeah, we haven't recorded, and a big reason for me has been I really kind of got the knocked out of me with the election, and probably like many of you out there, it kind of made a lot of other things seem less important. Like I was suddenly like, who the hell wants to be talking about dating and fucking when this shit's going on? And it just kind of made me feel like, yeah, just kind of paralyzed emotionally. I don't know. How are you doing with it all, Miss Manus?
I mean, I don't know. I actually think it kind of had the opposite effect on me, to be honest.
How so?
I felt like I needed to be doing 1,000 things, basically, after the election. Like, I was like, oh my God, how do I counter this in the best way? And I don't think I've necessarily been super effective so far, but it definitely kind of made me feel like I needed to mobilize my resources, such as they are, in terms of both getting more politically active, like in a more formal way, which I really haven't been for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm like showed up at Black Lives Matter marches and stuff, but I haven't really been part of organizing anything. Mm-hmm. And that's been, I think, one of the things that I kind of promised myself that I would start doing now. And I'm trying. I don't know if I've found the right spot for myself yet that feels effective, but and I actually think that, I mean, I think that everybody's reaction is totally valid, and I understand having the wind knocked out of you, but I also think that I think it's important not stop talking about fucking and like queerness and weirdness.
And
I think that, I mean, yeah, it's like, it's easy to feel like we just like lived through this golden age where we had the luxury to worry about stuff like, you know, the finer points of gender identity and, you know, like what butt plugs to use and such. But I also think that I think that it's important to not stop doing that in the face of this. I think that in itself is sort of a political act, not to like imbue our sex podcast with more political importance than it necessarily has, but I think I felt, I don't know, energized is a wrong word, I felt kind of frenzied and like I needed to be doing stuff. Basically, how about you, Otterpup? What was your immediate reaction?
Well, aside from the shock of having this great reactionary force triumph in such a large way, I think, you know, that reactionary force triumphed in a very obvious way, but I think that in itself created this current of a reaction to it. And I felt it, like I felt in some way, and I'm going to focus on some of the positive things, like in some way more liberated, like a tiny bit more liberated, or to think about things that wouldn't have otherwise have been,
really,
I would have been conscious of, to, you know, like to like your identity as gay was kind of like an afterthought or like a matter of fact thing, and suddenly it felt like it was under a siege of some sort,
right?
And so that created a reaction in itself, and like a kind of a validating, and like saying things that you wouldn't have otherwise said, or thinking things that you would, you know, considering things that you wouldn't have otherwise considered necessarily.
Are you saying it's made you feel more forceful in your that the identification itself now feels like a more political
Yeah,
act.
Exactly. Or maybe not more forceful, but more conscious of it and more like...
And conscious of your place in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, because it suddenly felt under siege of, mm-hmm. of different sorts.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit more about how, because I know that you and I had some conversations right after the election about that, about like things that were going on Facebook yeah. and like family wise. I don't know how much of that you want to talk about, but.
Well, some of it, yeah. I think, again, like to focus on the positive, I think it opened up some conversations, especially with my immediate family, with my parents, who, you know, my parents were super supportive for some time now, and I've come out to them a long time ago. But, you know, I felt like there were some things that remained unsaid before, you know, like I've come out to them, they were supportive, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there were some like open or like lingering issues or questions that were resolved somehow definitively, you know, like the, like my both parents came out very strongly in favor of gay rights and, you know,
since,
like equal.
Since this election, exactly. Was it as it was going on or since the actual election?
As it was going on.
It does sound like, you know, and I don't mean to be like a creepy person, but, you know, I peeped some things going on your Facebook and I would see you getting in some pretty heavy stuff with some people who seemed possibly related to you. But you're saying these discussions led your parents to really
double
down
to like take a stance in a way like that otherwise would not have happened, you know, like they wouldn't have otherwise, like it just wouldn't have been a topic of discussion otherwise. And I think that kind of affirmed their commitment to the idea of equal rights, particularly as it regards me, but also like in a broader way, like, you know, both my parents have been super supportive and, you know, everybody has been supportive and like there was no like explicit homophobia of any sort. But, you know, like I remember like a long time ago when I first came out, you know, my dad, for instance, saying like, oh, I will never fully understand it. Like it's you and just this is fine, but like I'm not. Like, I don't get it. Like, it's fine. But, and since then, you know, I'm sure that his position has changed on it, but it was never, like, it was never discussed. It was never explicitly said, like, oh, I've changed my mind, you know, and now I don't feel that way anymore. But this was an event that, like, allowed that to happen. Like, he actually openly said, like, I support gay rights and I, you know, like I'm very in favor of the advancements that society has made and such and such. And same with my mom. You know, again, this, I'm not saying that this is when they've changed their mind, but this was an opportunity for it to come out in the open and say it and like to open that kind of dialogue and to open that kind of understanding.
And you're saying that a fair amount of this occurred in part because they were witness to some of the discussions that were happening on social media.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think that people and with some like distant family, people who are not immediately in this conversation, it's not, I'm not saying that people are bigoted per se or like, but you know, people don't give it thought necessarily. So if there isn't some sort of a like a critical event like this where this is questioned, these things remain unsaid, you know, like you don't know like what like it doesn't matter. People accept you as you are, people accept you as a human being, as a friend, as a relative, but you don't really know like what are their thoughts on gay issues. Do they think it's just a like a lifestyle choice that you've made and you're like, oh, like one day, like it's August 5th, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should sleep with men, you know? Yeah.
How'd you know what I did on
like,
August 5th?
And I'm not, like, I'm not faulting anyone for thinking that, but who, like, why would you even think about it? Like, okay, like, you want to sleep with men, that's fine, you know, you've made this decision on August 5th, and this is fine. But I think the election and the discussions around gay rights and such, like kind of opened up that conversation, like, is this really true? Like, what is homosexuality? Like, is this your like lifestyle choice? Is it an intrinsic quality that's to you? Like, what, and what's like, what are the issues surrounding it? Like, what kind of you know, it opened that conversation, I think.
Right.
And it kind of allowed the flow of opinions that was interesting to observe. And I was kind of like surprised by some. I was like, oh, okay, well, I didn't, you know, again, it's something that you don't question necessarily. And you're like, oh, okay, you think this and you think that. Mm-hmm. Like, not like saying that there is homophobia around, but, you know, it's interesting to observe the variety of opinions. And it's kind of interesting to have a conversation about it and to have a dialogue about it. And, like, these are universal rights, these are issues that deserve to be discussed.
Yeah. I'm taking a lot of things from what you're saying right now. I don't think I was quite expecting to. One is that, you know, because I think this day and age we tend to be like, ugh, why are you on social media? That does nothing. And I think that all of us have these experiences where we'll do that for 5 seconds and then we'll feel depleted. And then some of us will do that, you know, incessantly. You know, I could certainly say that I've done that. And then we all arrive at this conclusion that it's all worthless. It's all stupid. Why should we do it? But what I'm taking from what you're saying, it's interesting, is that your parents actually being exposed to some of the arguments because they were seeing the kind of arguments that you were having with possibly someone else.
Yeah.
They finally had to think about this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Where they didn't normally. That's kind of one thing that's pinging me. Another thing is, you know, I don't know. I think, and just what I was talking about do I want to do this show about dating and fucking and all that. You know, the first episode that I did with New Brit, we kind of talked about some of these discussions existing in the past of, like, what is gay?
Yeah.
We'd be like, oh, well, we're beyond that now. And what I'm taking from what you're talking about is that's still...
Yeah, it's
very,
not... We're not beyond that.
Yeah. And so it's actually kind of a privileged perspective that New Brit and I may have had there about, oh, like, why are we even talking about that? That's, like, over.
Yeah. Whereas well, that's one
that's
of the
still,
things
that's
exposed.
That's still very much... That's... Yeah.
And that's one of the things exposed by the event, since that it's not over and it's, you know, it's... And it's a worthy subject to discuss.
Yeah.
It's out there.
I also feel like there's this thing... I mean, talking about, like, events exposing stuff, I mean, living in New York, especially for me, I don't have American family, so I don't, I don't really have to. There are not a lot of people in my life who I haven't chosen to have in my life. So most of the people in my life, you know, even if they might not have exact, like, same social, political, religious ideas that I do, like, are in the realm of, like, I get along with them, right? So, you know, but... Talking to you, Otterpup, talking to you, Victator, and also just like kind of observing things after the election opened my eyes to the fact that there's not only is there this big cultural rift in the U.S. in general, kind of like red state, blue state, urban, rural divide that we, you know, that everybody knows about. Even in New York City, there are a lot of people in a lot of neighborhoods who just are, you know, like, they're not, like, they're like, oh, yeah, finally some order. Like, finally,
you're saying
you know,
they're not woke. Yeah.
No, I mean, like, I don't know. I think that's kind of a silly word because it implies, you know, it's like, wake up, sheeple. But, no, I mean, I think there are people who just are coming from a very different purview. And, you know, the same way that I might feel like, oh, my God, what is happening? You know, this is like way beyond the pale that we're now, you know, talking about throwing out immigrants who like have visas,
yeah,
and, you know, all that stuff. Like, they might feel like, oh, it's way beyond the pale that people are having abortions and being openly gay. And, like, I think, you know, and that sort of exists in our midst. I know right after the election, I just had this real urge to go do like see a friend of mine make art, basically. So happened that our dear friend Marina was doing a poetry reading in Brighton Beach, which is a neighborhood that I generally enjoy visiting. I mean, it's also a neighborhood that went to Trump largely.
Yeah.
And it's also a heavily Russian neighborhood. And I think I'm not revealing too much if I say that Otropup is of Ukrainian extraction. So, you know, you, Otropup, have some different connotations with that neighborhood than I perhaps do. But like, we went there and there was suddenly this feeling of like, it was right after the election, we were talking about how overwhelmingly Brighton Beach voted for Trump, and there was suddenly this feeling of being like, shit, like, we're actually not surrounded by people who like us. and we went to a restaurant afterwards, and we heard people kind of talking, saying things that seemed fairly homophobic that were not directed at us, but nonetheless were unpleasant to hear. So I mean, I think there's that. I don't know. I think there's a lot of kind of, I don't know, I always, whether it is because of my general pessimism or like my family history, I don't know, but I've always had the paranoid feeling that a good chunk of the population is just like waiting to like bust out their bigoted attitudes. So in that sense, like, I was not convinced Hillary Clinton was gonna win. And I'm not shocked, but I'm not shocked that Trump's rhetoric won him the presidency, but that doesn't mean I don't find it disturbing. I'm not sure where I was going with this anymore, other than that, I think him actually becoming president has shaken a lot of people out of the sort of pleasant belief that was all this progress that has been made, and it's just going to remain that way. And I also think in some cases it's made people take stands that they didn't feel were necessary to take before. I know that I have been trying to get involved in some political organizations, some of them Jewish, and there's certainly a thing going on there where people who might not have been super outspoken against occupation in Israel-Palestine, or, you know, super outspoken against Islamophobia in the U.S., suddenly are, you know, because there's kind of like you were saying before, Otropup, like, do you know other people you have in your life, and you're like, yeah, maybe they're Republicans, maybe we don't totally agree on stuff, but you can kind of get along on a human level. And then something like this happens where it becomes a question of like, no, you are like directly against the full human rights of me and of people I care about. And that is a much harder line. Like, then you, that becomes, like, then you can't just, like, chill with them over dinner suddenly.
Well, yeah. And I think it's also an opportunity to open up the conversation and to see, like, you know, where people exactly stand.
Yeah,
and what, like, the Trump's victory felt like a validation of, like, a whole broad thing, like, swath of ideas that, you know, and it felt a validation for a variety of people who like held all sorts of irrational and bigoted beliefs that suddenly felt like, oh, okay, well, you know, here's a stamp of approval, and, you know, we were right all along. And it's not exactly always clear where the line is drawn and what each person's set of beliefs included, but I think to us it feels like all of these things are suddenly validated. It's like,
yeah. I think the point is, I think a lot of us progressives, especially those of us who come from any point of marginalization, it suddenly you realize how vulnerable all the rights that we've fought for are.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep, absolutely.
Really, it really
it's terrifying.
It takes like a majority. I mean, at this point,
it's
time,
terrifying.
There
yeah.
are no checks and balances. Like, I mean, it, and that's really, you know, except for the judges that still exist, like, you know, that have been implanted and thank God have like, usually like lifetime judgeships in certain places that are like blocking stuff. But I mean, that's really the only. That and the filibuster is kind of the only
Check
balancers. Yeah. I know this is kind of going off topic, and also at the risk of tokenizing both of you.
Let's go off topic.
But you touched on it a little bit, Ms. Maness, but both of you also come from different sets of immigrant backgrounds.
Yes.
You have very different stories when it comes to that.
We're both immigrants.
But
refugees. No, well,
and I don't know. I'm curious. Like, okay, sorry. I'm just gonna say a thing. Because I don't want to say that we shouldn't be terrified for our queer and trans rights. Of course that we should. But you know, and you know, all it takes is one new Supreme Court justice to, you know, and a new lawsuit and all that, you know. But at the same time, I am a lot less afraid for myself. And I think, you know, Trump's whole thing that he just, as of recently, you know, issued an executive order, or no, didn't issue, it said that he was going to maintain the same executive orders that Obama did when it came to, you know, LGBT, but that's only but that's only like federal workers, so like that's still like not get too excited about that. He's also said that he's going to defend a lot of like religious freedom laws, so that's scary as well. And I'm not saying that's not important, but that kind of scares me too, because I'm like, oh, he's trying to, and he has since his whole election, he'll say one thing, he'll say, oh, you know, like I'm LGBT positive, and then all the people who have come around in the last like 10 to 20 years about LGBT stuff who are on the right, they're like, oh, well, you know, I don't have to worry about my gay cousin anymore because Trump said this. But I think that a lot of other marginalized groups are a lot more vulnerable. Not that it should be a comparison necessarily, but sometimes it's like I'm so less scared for myself than I am for people of immigrant backgrounds, particularly Muslim immigrant backgrounds.
But also people of LGBT backgrounds too. I mean, I think it's very unclear, and I think it's important to recognize it as a civil rights issue.
No, certainly, of course.
Across the board, you know, LGBT, Muslims, like various issues, like the various immigrants of different backgrounds.
Certainly.
Like that there is a rule that applies across the board, and that should be valid all across.
Yeah.
But like I said, I want to tokenize the hell out of you. So how has the experience that you know, you come from shaped the way that you're seeing what's happening now? And if you want to, if as much as you want to share about the experience that you come from, I mean, you've got very different experiences, but still.
Well, Autopop handed me the mic, so I guess I'll start. I mean, first of all, like I'm an immigrant, but in a very privileged way, like I chose to come to the U.S. and you know, I come from a country, Sweden, which is like a very quote-unquote good passport to have, like perhaps one of the best when it comes to applying for visas and traveling in most countries. That said, like, I mean, I also have, I mean, this is something I actually thought a lot about in the last couple of days with the you know, sudden ban on immigration from 7 countries in the Middle East, which is, you know, blatantly targeted Muslims, basically. I think that, I mean, I have, because I'm an immigrant and because I've been through various visas and because, like, I've applied for a green card and all that stuff, I have an understanding of how that works that I think most Americans don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I've lived in this country for, oh, I don't know, like 16, 17 years now. And a lot of Americans are surprised to hear that I'm not a citizen. And I'm like,
yeah, but they don't just hand out citizenships. Like, that's not how that works.
Right. They're like, yeah, why haven't you gotten around to that? It's like cashing in that CVS coupon. Like, yeah, just kind of delay it.
And I guess my point is that, you know, even if you're like me, like, even if you're from, like, a wealthy country that is not perceived as a threat and, you know, you have, like, all these resources, it's actually a really, like, long and difficult and expensive process, and even more so if you're from Yemen or something, and even more so if you have refugee status. Like, that is something they, like, grill you on, and you have to, and I can't speak to this, maybe you can a little bit more, Otterpup, but, like, the way that they, you have to prove that you're a refugee and that you need that is like arduous and bizarre and difficult.
Well, yeah,
so, you know, like this, years, this idea, right? That people are just sort of pouring in, you know, and not being vetted is patently false. I mean, the other thing is that there is, and this I can, this is something that I can very much relate to, even though, like, my situation is not as precarious as that of many other people, is that, like, yeah, you can, I mean, I've lived here for, like, a decade and a half, and I'm still not guaranteed, like, I'm, and I have, I paid taxes here the whole time, you know, I have an apartment that I pay for, and a job, you know, I work, like, all that stuff, all the normal life stuff that people have, and yet, you know, I'm not 100% sure when I leave a country and come back in that I'm going to be able to come back in on some level. You know, just as an example, and this actually, this happened, this has nothing to do with Donald Trump's executive order. It just happened to happen a couple of days before that. But I mean, I was actually detained, and I have a green card. I was actually detained by immigration for several hours on my way back in at JFK 2 weeks ago. So my point is just that, like, I think anybody who's an immigrant feels a certain level of precariousness. Like, if you don't have,
it's vulnerable,
you know,
it's very vulnerable.
Even if you're a citizen,
You know, so there is that, and I think keep that in mind, that even somebody very comfortable and privileged feels that way, and then imagine what it's like to be, like, an actual refugee, or even just somebody from Yemen, say, who's lived here for a long time and, like, went back to visit family, and suddenly
literally weren't let in.
Literally weren't let in.
Even if they just, even if they had a green card, which, by the way, if anyone's not listening, is supposed to mean you have permanent residency.
Yeah,
that's not like, oh, hey, here's this thing that you can have. That's this thing that you worked really hard to get, that, like, took forever to get, and it was goddamn miracle that you got it. And so you have this thing that basically says you can do anything as a citizen except for basically vote or leave the country for more than 6 months. Everything else is almost kind of the same. It just means you're here permanently. But those people were not let in. People who the government had already decided were permanent residents. Like, just think about that. I don't know. It's terrifying.
It is. And it's because it's basically overturning rules and laws that are in place.
Yeah.
That people plan their lives around. And it's sort of not upholding one end of a contract in a sense between the individual and the government. And I think that there's, you know, anecdotally there have been stories of people who were, like, born in Sudan but now are Canadian citizens and, like, have a U.S. green card and almost weren't let into the country because some jackass immigration officer were like, well, you're from Sudan. I don't think we're supposed to let you in.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though that's not exactly what this executive order says, I think this, all these kinds of things, all these executive orders, all this, you know, Islamophobia and xenophobia and, you know, other, you know, homophobic things that may or may not, like, actually come to pass, it creates a sense of permissiveness, like, from the government, where individual officials, individual cops, individual immigration officials feel like they're like, oh, well, you know, maybe I can be more hardcore, like, maybe I shouldn't treat this person nicely. And I think that's the thing that scares me. I don't know, Otterpup, why don't you talk a little bit more about your immigrant situation?
Well, First off, I want to continue on what you were saying. I think there is a fear that decisions are made based not on some rational things, but on, let's say, like a common perception of Muslims as like sources of terror. And I think that's kind of the motivating thing behind the executive order. I think it's pretty clear, you know, that the reason for it is Islamophobia. It's not some rational thing, and it's not a rational decision. And I think it opens up the way, the path for other irrational things that are not based on reason. So it's like, okay, you know, some guy, this is some like some drunk guy in a bar idea of what makes sense as policy. And you know, there's a large proportion of the population that may feel that way, and then it's like, okay, well, this is a populist decision, let's enact it. And so, okay, let's do that against, you know, Muslim immigrants. I mean, it doesn't make sense, but let's do it to satisfy the segment of the population in the United States that will feel comfortable then. And then, like, what next? Like, what other decisions are we going to make based on this kind of rationale? You know, like, everybody feels uncomfortable with something else. Like, okay, let's not have any reasonable decision process on it. Let's just follow this guy in a bar, in some dive bar, like, ranting drunk about immigration or about who knows? Like, let him ranting about gays or abortions, and we'll make decisions based on that. That's the terrifying thing. And I think it's terrifying to anybody who is a minority of any sort, like whether you're a Muslim and you're a minority and you feel suddenly that your rights are impinged, or, you know, there is no, like, there is some just accusations of anti-Semitism, like, of the forces that are backing Trump, not Trump himself necessarily or his surrounding, but, you know, what will this lead to next? You know, like, will, like, some guy in a bar be, who is anti-Semitic, and that will be, like, a large proportion, or, like, homophobic? Will it lead to, like, executive orders that ground themselves in this sort of sentiment? You know, it's like, okay, this is what the populist feeling is. Let's then do this. Like, we're barring Muslims.
I think what people forget when it comes to these religious freedom laws, for example, is they're all like, oh, cool. Like, it's great. They're going to, like, tell the gays they can't, like, get a job, and we're fine with that.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't flaunt it. Oh, this woman had...
Stop flaunting your gayness.
Yeah. And then, like, oh, this woman, she had an abortion once. Definitely let's, like, not hire her. But the thing is, you know, this fight has been fought on religious grounds for almost every single group, because there was a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that when JFK was elected as a Catholic, was seen as revolutionary, because Catholics were, you know, because the country was obviously set up by Protestants, and you know, that was seen as a huge ass deal. Mm-hmm. For a long time, Catholics felt like they had no rights.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, when you think about the way that things were categorized, like, you know, as to who was quote unquote white, they were like, oh, we're not going to include Italians, we're not going to include Irish people. You know, that's all.
Yeah, and all based on some irrational ideas, but to cater to some populist sentiment.
So the thing is, the second religious orders start going through, it's, again, like a comfortable, you know, Greek Orthodox person might feel okay, a comfortable Jew might feel okay, but then really what it comes down to is someone might say, oh, you know what, actually, I'm not happy, you know, hiring you or having you here because, or giving you healthcare because we don't believe in the same God. And so people always think of Muslims and gays, but really, basically, when it comes down to that,
there's
many divisions, even, you know, obviously within Abrahamic religions, which all kind of share like one big thing, but also even within Christianity, there can be a whole bunch of fucking divisions.
Yeah, where's the line drawn? You know, I think it's a dangerous precedent, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, that said, like, let's not forget that there are lines drawn, like there were lines drawn, like during the Obama administration that certainly like excluded a lot of people from feeling safe and protected. But yes, at the same time, I'm like, I definitely do not subscribe to the line of thinking of like, well, I may as well not vote because like the Republicans and Democrats are the same shit. I mean, I feel like, you know, of course it was better under the Obama administration than it is like under Trump.
I agree.
Like,
that's a whole, but at the same time, okay. So like, I mean, everyone in this room might not agree, but I mean, I've been against the Electoral College my whole life. So I think if you're in a swing state, I don't really give a fuck how you vote. I don't. If you're not in a swing state, I mean, I don't. I just don't. I think it's telling that there was a 3 million vote margin for sure. But at the same time, I don't know. For me, that's not. I really could care less, which is a big reason to get away from the Electoral College, because it makes people not care and make decisions carelessly, and I don't know. But yes, obviously there's a huge difference between. That's a whole nother. Oh my god! Like, it's a whole nother debate, and I don't know. Yeah. It's a whole nother debate. Obviously, very big difference. Huge difference. And yeah, you're an idiot if you were in a swing state and you voted if you voted for some third party candidate, or you chose not to vote. You're a fucking asshole. You fucked us all. That's, you know.
So yeah, that's what we think of you. Hi.
Yeah. Hi, swing state voter.
Jill Stein voter. I don't know. I don't know if you want to talk about this, Victator, but like, you, what's the situation in your world, like in your life, in terms of what you've seen, like how people are kind of coming out politically one way or another?
It's not good. I'm on the extreme left. I am.
She's wearing all black, folks. Yes.
Yeah.
We all are.
Yes, we are. and as someone who's on the extreme left, I felt a lot of bullying throughout the election, which is kind of tying into what you were just talking about. I always intended on voting for Hillary Clinton, and I did vote for Hillary Clinton. But I was not happy with her policies, and obviously I realized that, and I always realized that she was a million times better than Trump. You know how everyone said during the election, oh my God, because everyone was fighting, whether or not they were on the left or the right, you could fight with someone on the right, or you could fight someone on your own party. And everyone was just like, oh my God, I can't wait till it's over. Now it's like, no, this is going to go on forever, is kind of how it feels. It
already feels like forever.
Yeah, exactly. So now these fights will continue. And so I don't want to get into like necessarily like what the Democratic Party should do, but I mean, there is so much brilliant differentiation among people on the left, and ew, gross to say, I'm sure that that's true on the right as well, but it's not a good time to be on the extreme left, because you're extremely unhappy with what's going on nationally, obviously, and you want to organize with others, but then you also have to, you will be organizing with people who say things that hurt your that make you feel like you have to organize with people who believe in 90% of
exactly what you and I disagree you with. Know I have to say that I never thought of myself as of the extreme left. I kind of had an idea of myself as kind of in the middle of things. Although I have to say that was really strongly challenged by the events of the past, I don't know, the election cycle. And I was like, wait, I am actually like I see that the right to the right of me stretches for so long, and it's like to such extremes. I'm like, I am actually like very much on the left, considering all the things that I'm seeing coming from the right. You know, but that said, you know, I still believe in having a conversation. Like, I still believe in there being, like, even middle ground between even some people on the right. Like, it's not all, like, centrifugally kind of pushed to the edges. I still think that there are people on the right who, you know, fall into some sort of a middle ground, and you know, and socially and various, like, there's some bridges to be made, but it seems less likely than before, though. Like, before it seemed like there was like a solid middle, and now it's less so.
It does feel like less.
Glenn Beck really hates Trump. But I mean, I feel like getting to what you were saying, Victator, about needing to organize with people who we disagree with, I felt like I had that both like driven home to me and challenged by a meeting that I went to where people started arguing about like whether or not it was useful to organize in terms of electoral politics and like get out the vote and midterm elections and stuff, or if it should all just be like extra parliamentary and street politics. And I was like, you guys, like, obviously we have to do both. Like, I have very little patience for people who think you could like just do one or the other. But that said, it also almost made me just want to walk out of that, like, never have anything to do with that organization again, because I was like, you guys are not reality based. But on the other hand, but I recognize there's a usefulness to like sticking with it and organizing with people who might not share like all of your ideas. But also somebody I know, I don't know if you saw this, Victator, somebody I know shared on Facebook that they had been to, they'd basically been infiltrating what was formerly a Young Republican chapter, but is now like a friend of Trump. It's not called Friends of Trump, but it's basically like a Trump supporter chapter now. And like, they had gone to this meeting and it was just like so organized, and these people at the meeting who were all Trump supporters, like, they each had, like, they were each assigned like a certain beat, if you will. Like, some people were like monitoring leftist groups on Facebook, and other people were like, you know, like, they all, like, other people were calling their congressmen really diligently. Like, it was just like super structured and people really organizing. Yeah. And I was like, fucking hell, this is what I keep saying we need to do on the left, you know?
No, don't get me wrong, I completely agree. I just, for me, it's more about the language. It's like, you want to talk about like people feeling marginalized. It just sucks to feel marginalized in your own party. Like, it's like, I was always going to vote for Hillary Clinton, no matter what. But what I felt like a lot of what was going on was people telling me that my concerns about her, like, just telling me that they weren't valid. And we do that to anyone, no matter who that is, that's immediately going to make them less fired up about dealing with you. And so I think what the left needs to do, especially, you know, is when they're dealing with the extreme left, like, I mean, I'd be more than happy to, you know, to organize with the moderate Dems. And believe me, I have, and I tried, and I do. But the second you show up to something and someone tells you that what you think about something is absolute bullshit, you no longer want to do that. And that's what was happening. And I do think that was a mistake. I do think that was a mistake, that people were like, and I'm not saying they were wrong, they're absolutely right. When people said that you were, you know, that you had a choice of choosing a far right dictator,
mm-hmm.
and the choice of choosing someone who you really disagree with, and
same old neoliberal.
Don't get me wrong. Like, exactly. Don't get me wrong. They were right.
Yeah.
But the way that that conversation went was very aggressive, and I don't think it actually helped. I don't think it helped organize. I don't think that anyone who was on the extreme left actually paid attention and thought about it, because all they heard was, you're wrong and your concerns don't matter. And your concerns could have been a really big deal. Like, some people that we know who didn't vote for Hillary, they didn't, or actually, I don't know if they didn't, but that really didn't want to, were people who were from countries where, you know, things that she did and advocated led to people they knew experiencing like torture and like whatever. And so the second we start being like, oh, come on, you just disagree with her, the second we start not listening to people, I think we'd lose them. And so what I think the conversation should be was like, oh, it should be like, all right, look, no, you're totally right. Instead of being like, you're an idiot, you don't care, you're fine with a fascist, which is what people on the extreme left were hearing, then they lose interest and then they do a protest vote. Instead of saying like, all right, you're right, it is about the lesser evil, let's elect the lesser evil, like admitting it. I think people on the left, that was really important. Instead of telling their lesser evil argument was bullshit, just saying, all right, you're right, but let's do it anyway. Yeah, here's why.
I mean, I think the lesson is that everybody just needs to listen a bit better to each other, and that there needs to be a concerted effort to, I don't know if unify is the right word, but just needs to be an effort to fucking like bring a lot of interested groups in to work together on the left.
Yeah.
Because,
but we have to respect each other is the point. Yeah. It's like, because we do have different interests, but it's like, how do we stop this? It's not going to be by telling us that others among us are wrong. And we have another show coming up on KPIS, so we have to end this right now. Thank you so much, Otter Pup.
And, thank you. Thanks for
having
me. And
your lover who stayed silent miraculously.
Otter Pup 2.
Yeah, everyone take care and fuck. And yeah, organize or shut up. It's that simple. Yes. All right. Bye, guys. Love you.